It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed to the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we today?
We are doing wonderful.
We're wet.
A little water. I feel like a duck.
I was thinking about when we were walking in, there's geese outside the building. Water off a goose's back.
I think the one was laughing at us.
Probably.
Yeah. Even though you wouldn't go near him, but that's okay.
Yeah, I was afraid there might be a nest there, and they want to disturb that, and I've seen how they can be rather protective of their nest, and I didn't want to make it on some blooper video, some kid with a phone out there seeing me getting chased by a goose, so we avoided that embarrassment this morning.
Yeah.
Minor victories.
That is kind of funny, actually, thinking about it, but nevertheless. Yeah. And it's going to be a fun day. We 2 days from now, you know what it is, John?
No.
I don't either. April Fool's Day.
Now, do you like to do pranks?
I do. I love pranks.
I do, too.
Yeah, love pranks.
I mean, as we were talking about coming before we came into some of the stupid college stuff we used to do. But, yes, I like
college
doing pranks.
Stuff. Yeah.
For those listeners out there that have children, stay tuned. I have a list of over 30 pranks that you can do against your kids. That's always fun.
And the rest of you, I have a list of 25 of the top ones, and most of them are harmless and could be performed at work if, you have a friendly boss anyway.
I'll tell a story of the best prank I think I've ever pulled, which was on a former boss of mine. And we also have the top pranks in history going back to 1933. There's been some, I have a handful of those that are pretty good. It seems like various governments and so forth have a little sense of humor. I guess they have to be to do what they do to us, don't they?
They better have a sense of humor. And thanks to the Chef Shop, again, for supporting us, underwriting the show here at WSIE-FM 88.7 The Sound. Nancy and Scott, we're in the full swing of spring. They have lots of stuff in the shop, so stop by. Visit what? Duet?
Full swing of spring.
Full swing of spring. We are in full spring swing, so to speak. So say that three times fast.
Exactly.
The Chef Shop at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois. The Schnucks Plaza next to Target, 618-659-9840. Stop by. Say hi. Our coffee cups will soon be there, we hope. And go ahead and tell them you listen to the show. You can leave your email address or phone number. We'll call you as soon as they come in if they don't have them yet. But they're going to be pretty cool. They're thermal cups, and they're going to keep that coffee nice and warm. In fact, hot for the duration. That is the best way to do it. So,
have you ever had iced coffee?
I have had iced coffee.
Did you like it?
If it was a warm day, up 90s plus outside, yes, I then it's okay.
I'll just drink my hot coffee and air conditioning.
Yeah, that's an alternative.
Cold coffee is just one of those that gives me the full body shiver.
Well, if it's really hot out, maybe it's not a bad thing, John,
I still like my coffee hot.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So,
what are we talking about today?
In the market, I read this article. Well, the headline got my attention. And then as I went and started reading the article, I realized that there was a political bent to it.
Of course, everything's political today.
I am so tired of narratives and agendas and political spin and so forth. So what I thought was going to be a different in the market segment ended up taking me down the path of single-payer system versus not single-payer system.
And we're talking about healthcare?
Healthcare, yes. Mm-hmm. But the article was How Washington Just Upended Your Dreams of Early Retirement. So I saw that headline.
Intriguing.
Intriguing, exactly. And then I started reading it. Yeah. And basically, it was defending the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, whatever you want to, I'll stick with the Affordable Care Act. But before we get down that, I will say that the Republicans are idiots.
Well, I won't argue with that.
You had 8 years
yep.
to get your stuff together.
And they didn't.
And they didn't.
They blew it.
And they came up just embarrassing themselves. And unfortunately for us, you know, again, it's the little guy. It's us, the non-political elites that get hosed
we paid a price.
So, but anyway, this article started me going down the path of, you know, defending the Affordable Care Act, saying that, you know, because of what's been proposed, the premium subsidies will go away.
Yeah.
Well, we had the Affordable Care Act for 1 year, and those premium subsidies that they talk about, actually, if you get a refund, you don't get the refund anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit of a shocker for our tax return.
Surprise.
And if your income is over a certain threshold, then you owe more in taxes at the end of the year.
Yeah.
As you know, during that year, which was 2014, we were part of the Affordable Care Act. Our premiums, our family premiums, were over $15,000 that year.
Unaffordable Care Act, John.
Yes. And our deductible was $9,600, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was so we could get the lower premiums.
Out of pocket, yep.
So you're talking over $20,000 out of pocket before anything kicks in.
I hear you.
The Affordable Care Act is falling apart. I don't care what you say. It will go bankrupt. We need an alternative. We need something. I agree. We have a health care problem in this country. But you know, Land of Lincoln, that was
gone.
That was the elite or the model for the other states to follow, because the administration at that time, President Obama, who was a former senator of Illinois, created this insurance company to provide insurance in the state of Illinois. And I think within 2 years, it was gone.
Yep.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Went bankrupt.
So as I went through this list of why single payer system is so wonderful, I wanted to talk about a couple of these items.
So I take it our topic for today is healthcare.
No, our topic today will be April Fools, but well, okay. I'm not going to try and, you know, have this last a whole half hour.
John, think about it for a moment. We're talking about healthcare close to April Fool's Day.
Yes, there.
That was unintended, but boy, did it work.
Yeah, that was no kidding. You want to talk about a joke? That's our government.
You got to stay sharp.
That's the biggest joke we have. Okay, so
we're going to provide lower premiums. April Fools.
You can keep your doctor.
Better coverages.
April Fools.
April Fools. Yeah, we didn't need it. We didn't really mean it. It was April Fool's joke. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Yeah. So I guess we can say April Fools after every one of these. So single payer myths, single payer facts. This was an article that was done by Physicians for National Health Program. Okay, this ought to be good. The healthcare delivery system will remain private. Now, I also pulled up another article called the single payer system. Why would it ruin U.S. healthcare? And this is done by Medscape, www.medscape.com. And they, I don't know if they wrote their article after the single payer myth, single payer fact piece was written, because it almost disputes every item that I'm going to go through. But anyway, the healthcare delivery system remain private. So what they are contending is that government will stay out of it. Doctors will still make the decisions. So you and your doctor, who know best about your health care, will make the decisions. Oh, I remember not to push the space bar on that.
I set it off to the side. It's just way over there.
Yeah. Last time we recorded, Larry unfortunately hit the space bar on the keypad, which stops recording, so then we had to go back and re-record. So I was just reminding him to avoid that.
The first time was practice.
April Fools.
yeah. We're recording, John. April Fools.
Yeah, it got all riled up for nothing. So looking at some countries that already have a single-payer system, such as Great Britain and Canada, they have found that that's not true, that they needed to create what was called a strict central planning organization. And at the end of the day, the government sets the rules. So this article here can talk pie in the sky, But facts are really just an inconvenient little piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
National Health Insurance Program could save approximately $150 billion on paperwork alone. Folks, it'll be the government that is running health care. The government and not having paperwork is not true. It'll never happen. I was in the military. Everything is in triplicate, quadruple. I mean, it's just ridiculous amount of paperwork. Can you name one government program that has ever stuck to budget or saved us money? If that was true, we wouldn't have $20 trillion of debt.
Yeah, I can think of just one, John. April Fools.
All right, this one is true. Most businesses would save money. Absolutely. But everyone hates the fact that big companies make all these profits. Well, if you remove the corporate aspect of providing insurance for the workers or the employees of the company, absolutely they're going to save money. And you just made more profits for the bigger companies that you've been complaining about making profits. Okay, these are, they say, are myths. The government would dictate how physicians practice medicine. They say that is a myth.
Mm.
It's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Happening already. It's out there.
Okay. Let's see.
Filler.
Oh, here's a good one. Waits for services would be extremely long. They say that is a myth. All right, here's an example. Okay, and this is from Canada. Waiting lists are a familiar feature of single-payer systems, especially for higher costs and cutting-edge healthcare. According to a report by the Fraser Institute, an independent think tank in British Columbia, Canada, the median waiting time to get treatment from a specialist has doubled over the past 20 years. Canadian patients wait the longest for orthopedic surgery, over 42 weeks is your wait.
Wow.
Neurosurgery, sounds kind of important. That's over 31 weeks. But hey, you know what? Plastic surgery, you only got to wait 27 weeks.
There you go.
Here's another example, and this is Dr. Chalia, whose North Dakota practice is 80 miles from the Canadian border, says that many, many Canadian patients on waiting lists come to him and other providers in the area. They come across the border and pay cash. The way I see it, the Canadian system saves money by delaying care by rationing. Does that word sound familiar?
Rations, yep.
There won't be no rationing of health care.
Mm-hmm.
In actuality, in countries that have a single-payer system, there is rationing.
April Fools.
Mm. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, he noticed that his friend from Canada was huffing and puffing and having a hard time breathing, said he needed to get a stress test. His Canadian family physician was initially reluctant to order one, but finally agreed. It then took 3 months to get the stress test done. Even though the results were strongly positive, the man wasn't scheduled for an angiogram until the following year. It ended up that his angiogram found he had a 99% blockage, which is called the widowmaker,
mm-hmm.
and he finally got a stent. Okay, now you know just about 6 months ago, I had a calcium test done. The insurance doesn't cover it. I had to pay $150, and it was because I'm type 1 diabetic, so they wanted, you know, there is some correlation, though it's being disputed back and forth, between your calcium score and if you're going to have potential heart attack, heart disease, and so forth. So anyway, I went and had a calcium test done. I got the results back from that within a couple days, and my calcium score was high. Within 30 days, I had been in front of a cardiologist twice, had all my stress tests done, and was clear that everything is good. 30 days versus a year and a half. Okay.
Well, let's just say, under the circumstance, when you make heart-related illnesses, patients wait a year to be treated, you save money because a good percentage of them are not going to be here a year from now. So that's one way they can save money on the system.
Mm. Okay, another one. People will overutilize the system. They're saying that's not true. Listeners, if something is free, think of iPhones, name any other, it gets overutilized. That means there is absolutely no control on the demand. So yes, it would get overutilized. I don't know who wrote this piece that was trying to dispute. This one made me laugh.
They were just preparing for April Fool's Day.
Yes, and you can get ready to say that phrase just a second here. This is a myth. Government programs are wasteful and inefficient.
April Fool's.
Okay, folks, think about this for a second. If you were trying to determine what government health care would look like, can you think of an entity in the United States that already provides government-funded health care?
Military?
The VA.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Think about the debacle, the farce, the joke that the VA system is for our heroes, the ones who should have the best health care coverage because they put their life on the line and are suffering. That, folks, the VA is an example of government health care. So, do I say that the Republicans have the best plan in place? Absolutely not. However, the single-payer system is not a path that we want to go down. I was glad to read in some of the other articles that the interest, there's waning enthusiasm for the single-payer system. Vermont, here's a good one, another quick little example. In Vermont, back in 2011, they consulted with a consultant. Imagine that.
It's a good start.
They consulted with a consultant, and they predicted that they would be able to save $590 million by creating Green Mountain Care, which was single-payer system for the state. However, by 2017, Green Mountain Care was slated to cost the state $4.3 billion. That's a $5 billion error.
It's government math.
That's a little beyond immaterial. So it would have doubled the total budget of $4.9 billion for the state in the year 2015. In order to make that work, they would have to have a payroll tax of 11.5% and a state income tax of 9%.
Yeah, 20% more or less. I mean, you know.
In a state that already has high, the Northeast, I'm sure, has high income tax. I don't know off the top of my head. It's been a long time since I was in public accounting. So anyway, faced with rationing in Canada, the Vermont single-payer advocate said it was simply caused by stingy taxpayers. Yes,
sure.
We love paying taxes because they do such wonderful things with our money.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we're going to need a new segment, the soapbox. We'll just get rid of In the Market and call it the soapbox. So I can just vent. I can make myself feel better, relieve stress, and I will be healthier.
And then you won't need the health care, John.
Can you believe the stupidity? So what is the fix? What are some things that we can do? For me, I think the biggest way to fix, not fix, but certainly get us moving in the right direction would be to let insurance companies sell across state lines. Okay, car insurance, homeowners insurance. There are no restrictions on those products being sold across state lines. And guess what? The premiums are not astronomical. We have a van, a minivan, a car, and our auto insurance is right around $1,100 a year for full coverage. It works. When you let competition go in and take care of it, it works. I meant to do some research, and I still want to figure out why the restriction. Is it the state insurance that only lets certain, there's other kickbacks? What's going on that health insurance companies cannot sell across state lines? Where did that start? How did that happen?
Well, I will first admit that I am not an expert in health insurance.
April Fools.
We are
he plays one on TV.
Forced by necessity to deal with all aspects of our clients' financial lives. And unfortunately, health insurance is a major component of that. When you're talking about spending, $15,000, $20,000 out of a family's income to cover something they may or may not need, and in addition to that, to cover the out-of-pocket, the first $6,000 to $10,000 they're going to have to pay out of their own pocket, plus the premiums, I digress. But I understand it is federal mandate that if the insurance carriers like Blue Cross Blue Shield or any of the others, United Healthcare, that they are restricted by the government, by the federal government, of selling across state lines. I may be corrected on that. If so, feel free to email me at LXO at Nickel.
I thought you were going to give him my email address.
feel free to email me at John Grony. LXO, LLEXOW at NickelFinancial.com. But I believe it is restricted because all types of insurance are governed by, as Kevin Nickel would be fond to say, the McCarran Act back in the, I believe it was the 1930s, which—
Did you vote on that one?
No.
Okay.
Which predicated the fact that states govern insurance and insurance regulations. So when an insurance carrier wants to change premium or program or whatever that they happen to offer to the public, they have to submit it to the states for approval. And the best way to go would be to create competition. I mean, as you said, in 2000 and I guess it was 14 that the ACA first came into play. And then in 15, I had a group program, which went up only slightly with Blue Cross. In 16, I was forced to go to Coventry to an individual plan, which is the only thing I could afford that gave me coverage at more than one particular hospital with very limited doctors. And at the end of 2016, Coventry got out of Illinois altogether. They didn't want to deal with the state. They didn't want to deal with the federal government. So they said, it's all right, we're not going to do this. And we're left with Blue Cross Blue Shield. Now, I like Blue Cross Blue Shield. Don't love them, but I like them. They provide generally pretty good coverage in accordance with their contract that you sign up for.
Just make sure you pay at the wazoo.
Make sure you read the fine print. But I'm currently paying the first $6,000 or so out of pocket. And then if we go in network, which sometimes is a joke, because the other day I had to go in for a sinus CT scan and they didn't find anything. Yeah, there he goes. I was waiting for that. When I went in, I talked to...
I wasn't surprised, which is why I didn't have an initial reaction.
Yeah. So I talked to the Blue Cross, and I said, oh, yeah, here's the company you want to go through. And I called that, which I always do. I called that particular organization, and I said, well, I'm told that you are a preferred provider under Blue Cross. And they said, oh, we were last year, but we're not anymore. And I'm like, well, then who do we go to? We don't know. You know, I have to call Blue Cross again. So I called them back and round around we went. And 3 or 4 hours later, I did find someone, although I had to drive 4 or 5 times as far to get to them, who was a primary.
It was in network, but it wasn't in the state.
It was in network, but it was in state. It just wasn't in our city. And, you know, I had the other situation with my daughter under Blue Cross. She went into an approved provider to have an X-ray done, and they sent the X-ray to the specialist to read it. And although the company that did the X-ray was in network, they now were saying that they sent it to a radiologist who was not in network, and therefore they are going to pay for it. And we're talking $300-$400, and you know that's a lot of money for anybody to just write arbitrarily when you did not expect it. You went through the steps to make sure you were in network, and then they pick somebody who's out of network and they expect you to pay for it. So the competition would be by far the best solution, allowing insurance carriers to sell across state lines. You know, we're in Edwardsville. We're 20 minutes from the Arch and the St. Louis Cardinals and downtown St. Louis. Many of the renowned facilities in healthcare, medical treatment, and research are within 30-minute drive of us, but yet most of them are not covered under the majority of the plans. Well, certainly not covered under, the best of my knowledge, any of the Obamacare or ACA plans. That's what I've been told anyway. So you have to go outside of that to a plan that actually does allow them in network and then pay more money. So competition is number one. It's got nothing to do with the government being involved. They should get out of it altogether, turn it over to the states, and allow intrastate. Missouri can dictate what the insurance carriers sell in Missouri. Illinois can dictate what they do in Illinois. But just like there's reciprocity for your driver's license, for your FOID card, for many other issuances, they should have the same thing on health care to allow us to take care of those issues. So, all right, I'll step down off my soapbox now, John.
I think we have found a new segment for us called the soapbox. But I do want to know why there's the mandate that they cannot sell across state lines. And thinking about Obamacare for Illinois, if I recall at the time when we did Land of Lincoln, there was two, maybe three total providers that you could go through, United Healthcare being one of them. And from what I understand, United Healthcare was looking to get out of the business of the exchanges. And if that's the case, then there's only one or none left in Illinois. So anyway, I don't know. But I do want to know if anyone has that information as to when it happened that insurance companies could not sell health insurance across state lines, but basically any other product, life insurance, auto insurance, you know, property, casualty, homeowners, everything, that those can be sold across state lines. It just makes absolutely no sense to me, other than there had to be some money exchanging hands. Not that I'm a skeptic or negative, but I'm just saying.
Well, and I'm looking now that Daryl has provided us with internet access from the studio.
Just don't touch the space bar.
I'm staying away from that one. And it does allow us to gain access to the outside world because we certainly don't have it in here, including cell service. But I pulled up the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. NAIC is a popular agency, and I talk about interstate health insurance sales, myth and reality.
I hope it's better than the myth and reality one that I just read.
Well, we hope. Let's see. The myth is allowing individuals to purchase insurance across state lines will give them access to lower premiums. And their reality is interstate sales will start a race to the bottom by allowing companies to choose their regulator. Allowing banks to choose their own regulator was, of course, a major cause of the financial crisis. Insurers will seek regulations that allow them to aggressively select their healthiest risk. So we get into adverse risk, which is one of the issues out there that insurance carriers don't want to insure the sick. And I understand that it's going to cost them more money, but that's one of the major requirements of ACA, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. They have to cover everyone and share the risk.
All right, but I mean, homeowners insurance is offered to, you know, Florida, where there's hurricanes. They may pay a little bit more in their premium, but they still get it. So someone who has a chronic illness, I mean, they pay a little more in premium, but they still can get the coverage, or they go into the high risk pool. And then, you know, the whole thing with insurance is it's a game of law of large numbers. You get everybody into the pot and the risk is spread across everyone and it becomes affordable for everyone.
Well, they're talking about, you know, if you had policies sold across state lines, would they be governed cooperatively by the states? And what they're saying, the reality is allowing insurance carriers to be sold across state lines would eliminate the ability of insurance regulators to assist consumers. Interstate policies would, for the first time, allow insurers unlicensed in the purchaser's state to sell health insurance, which would otherwise be a criminal offense. So there's a lot of licensure. There's a lot of, as I said, reciprocity that needs to come into play.
But if it works in all other forms of insurance.
Yep, which it does. It makes sense.
Common sense just.
It makes sense. So why would they do it?
Oh, there you go. April Fool's.
Cost. Follow the dollars. That means they have to go to different insurance states, different regulators to find approval. In fact, I'm well aware, and we have another segment we will be doing on long-term care insurance. And I had a client ask me the other day, do all carriers of long-term care insurance, because they wanted me to review their policies. Do they all raise premiums pretty consistently, which is allowed not on an individual basis, but on a group basis, every class of a policy sold, could submit for increase in premiums. And there's one carrier out there who said, no, we sold the policy. We told people what we were going to charge them. We are not going to raise premiums. They went to the state to approve a new class of policies at a higher rate because their costs were going up and not changing the old ones. And the state said no. The state said no. You have to go back and raise premium on your existing insureds before we're going to approve any new policies. And the company said no. So they are no longer allowed to sell long-term care insurance in that state, which good for them. They stood up for their rights. They're protecting their policy owners. You know, shame on the state for putting them in a situation that they're doing the right thing.
I love government.
Yeah, well, I love government when it... Never mind. Ever, never.
Okay, well, there are a couple accounts, programs that are available to help offset this. I will say those who are, you know, based on that original article that are looking to retire now, you know, these won't be very helpful. But for the younger listeners out there, there's one that I really like, and that's the health savings account. And there's another one that's decent. It's employer-sponsored, the flexible savings account.
FSA, sure.
And I will let Mr. Lexo, the expert in these areas, go with that or talk about these two programs. But it's a way where you can sock some money away and pay for healthcare expenses and get a little bit of a tax break.
Thank you, John. All right, let's talk about this a little bit. Employers, and this has been going on for many, many years. I can think back 25 or more years ago where flexible savings accounts, FSAs, which is an employer-sponsored account, usually in conjunction with their health insurance, allow an employee to fund a certain amount of money that they would put away on an annual basis to be used for healthcare expenses, the expenses generally under the IRS code that are approved as healthcare-related expenses, and to pay for those by the end of the calendar year out of that money, which is put away on a pre-tax basis. The one catch was that you had to spend all the money or you lose it, so it was a use it or lose it. The law was subsequently changed to allow you to do a carryover. I believe the carryover ultimately went to about mid-February. So, you know, if you got to the end of December and you needed glasses, you needed a hearing test, you needed whatever, your blood work done, you'd get it done. The bill would come in January. You go ahead and pay it out of that FSA for last year, and that would allow you a pre-tax payment of your health insurance. So I think FSAs are great for companies who have them. There are some downsides. The company can put money into an FSA if they choose, but they don't have to. And the biggest challenge, I guess, for those with a small family, if you have a large family, it's not that big a challenge, is to determine how much money are you going to spend on healthcare. So are you going to put $2,000 or $5,000 or how much are you going to put away for those payments that have to be made by the end of the year, plus a couple of months afterwards that you get in grace. So I like FSAs. The downside is they have to be used at the end of the year, or relatively speaking. I'm much more in favor of the HSA, the health savings account. Again, it's been around for a number of years. It actually, for those, I would say at any age, but certainly for those who are in their 50s, you know, still have 5 or 10 years till retirement, if they're not maxing out their HSA, if they're eligible, then they're missing a bet, because this is money that you can put away on a pre-tax basis. And John knows I'm a big in favor of putting money away on a pre-tax basis. But you can put away, if it's for yourself, the numbers for 2017, up to $3,400 for an individual, each individual, if it's a family or the family actually can put away $6,750. If, for example, the health plan covers the husband and the wife is a dependent, then you'd be subject to the $6,750 limit for that year to put into your HSA on a pre-tax basis. If you're both covered under your own plan or two different companies, you could each do $3,400, which, of course, then would put you up at $6,800. So a $50 difference, not much. That money's put away on a pre-tax basis. My suggestion is that you get it into an investment account. There are a number of HSAs out there that allow you to invest in funds, very low-cost funds, to grow it, because the goal, in my mind, is to put enough money away on a pre-tax basis, not to use it for healthcare during your working years, but to accumulate it, much like you do your 401k or IRA for when you're going to need it after you retire. So if you, you know, if you put the $8,000 roughly or $6,000 away over 10 years, you know, with interest, hopefully you might have $100,000 sitting there you can use for healthcare needs. And the statistics today show that those who retire at age 65 are going to spend probably $250,000 during the balance of their lifetime just for health care. That could be covering deductibles. It could be co-pays. It could be things that are not covered under Medicare. Certainly, you want to get a Medicare supplement to help offset some of those. And the but you know, the premium for a Medicare supplement might be $200-$400 a month. So again, we're spending $4,000-$5,000 a year that you may not have in your budget, although you should have if you have a good financial plan that we would prepare. But you may not have that in your budget for after you retire, so an HSA account would be very helpful. For those of us who are age 55 or older, so it's a little different. It's not like IRA, if you're over 50, or 401k, that you can put away an additional catch-up contribution. An HSA is age 55 or older by the end of the year. You can put in an additional $1,000. So, you know, for last year, my wife and I certainly, and you have up until April 15th without extensions, so you cannot extend that with your extensions on your personal tax return, but you have up until April 15th to put it in for the prior year. And for last year, it was $3,350, so basically $6,700 that we will be putting away, plus another $2,000 because we each get $1,000 catch up. So that's $8,700 we can put away on a pre-tax basis for last year, going up only a little bit, another $100 for 2017. So we could actually fund last year before April 15th. We could also fund the current year, 2017, if we had the cash to do it and put it in now. And that is predicated on the fact you have a high deductible plan that makes you eligible to do an HSA. So, and we do, as I've shared many times, you know, our first $6,000, I think $250, but who's counting, is out of pocket on our plan. So that is certainly a high deductible plan. You can have a deductible as low as anything above $1,300 for an individual, or for a family, $2,600. So if any of you are fortunate enough to have a lower deductible, but it's more than $1,300 per person or $2,600 for the family, you still can do an HSA. And I would highly recommend that because that's one way you can put money away. You save taxes, federal and state now tax. You still pay your FICA and Medicare as you do with 401k or IRA contributions. But you're putting money away on a pre-tax basis. It is allowed to accumulate. Now listen to me. It's allowed to accumulate tax-free if you use it for medical, approved medical expenses at any time in your future. So that's different than an IRA where it is tax deferred. You're putting money away pre-tax, it is tax deferred, and you pay tax when you take the money out of your retirement account. But with an HSA, it is pre-tax money going in. It accumulates tax-free for at any point in the future that you use it for medically approved expenses. So it actually is one of the better deals that's out there in terms of covering unanticipated or even some of the anticipated medical expenses that you have as far as your, you know, deductibles, your co-pays, anything that you have medically related, to use that money for that. So we're funding it today. We're not using that money for medical expenses today. We're paying that out of current income. We're letting it accumulate for the future. Obviously, when you do become eligible for Medicare at age 65, you can no longer fund an HSA. So if you're going to do it, you have between now and age 65 to get that job done. Although when I turn 65, we can go ahead and continue to fund Diane's HSA, which we will do. But then that money's going to sit there until, and hopefully we won't need it, but until we use it for medical expenses down the road. So I think it's one of the better things. It is one of the things under, for those who were paying any attention, it is one of the things under Trump's bill or Trump's plan to change the Affordable Care Act. They were planning and are still planning on expanding HSA accounts to allow you to put more money away. Because again, if you haven't planned for the medical expenses, if you're looking at spending $250,000, and that includes potentially your stay in a nursing home for a rehab. The majority of illnesses and long-term care, and as we talked last week about disability, are from illness, not from accident or injury. So the chances, whether it's cancer, whether it's diabetes, whether it's some other disease that occurs after, at or after retirement, those are things that will put you in a position that you have to need to spend additional money. And believe me, a lot of clients were not thinking of spending $250,000 in retirement just on their health care. But that is a reality. There are some ways of mediating that in terms of getting good long-term care insurance to cover that need. We do have that personally, so that was taken care of. And allowing yourself with a good Medicare supplement and a Part D coverage to cover prescriptions. It is manageable, but you do have to manage it. It's got to be part of your plan. It's got to be in writing with specific time frames and objectives. It has to be implemented, and you have to monitor it, take a look at it on a year-to-year basis, at least that often. So HSAs, I think, are a great way of putting money away pre-tax and using tax-free to cover your medical expenses. If you're not currently doing it, check out what your employer has available. If your plan is indeed eligible as a high deductible plan to allow you to do an HSA, and find somewhere to put the money that it's not just in a savings account earning 1.1% if you were lucky enough to get that. So that's my story on HSAs, John.
And I do hope that, and that was the one part that I liked with the new ACA proposal, was the expansion of the HSA. I would like to see them remove the restriction that it has to be a high deductible and just make it like a Roth IRA or whatever, but make an account set aside and people can save. I mean, it's in the government's best interest, which means they probably won't do it. But, I mean, would they rather give a tax break of 20 cents on the dollar or pay for the insurance or pay for the health expense themselves, which is dollar for dollar?
Well, and I get, I'm back on my soapbox now, John. So,
bring it.
You heard that step up. But I was in the unfortunate situation recently. It kind of reminds us of our mortality. As I woke up on a Saturday morning and I couldn't put any weight on my foot. And it was fine when I went to bed the night before, and I don't remember getting kicked or, kicking anybody overnight.
Diane was mad at you.
Yeah, she might have been, but I took a hammer to it. But I couldn't put any weight on it. So I went to, and that's the other thing. I called my physician, tried to get in, couldn't get in. So they pawned me off on somebody else who really didn't have the qualifications. They said, it looks like an ankle sprain. Take some ibuprofen, call me, in a week. Well, it got worse and worse and worse. And it was about a week later, I went to a podiatrist. There are, according to Blue Cross, no podiatrists in network. Actually, they did list the organization in Edwardsville that was the company. Here's what they told me. The company was approved, but none of their doctors were listed and approved. And I'm like, what does that mean? I don't understand. So I actually physically walked in the door and talked to the people at the desk, and I said, here's what they told me. And they're like, well, we used to be, but we're not anymore, and the company is, but the doctors aren't. And I'm like, what does this mean? Well, you can either, submit it and, for example, the visit, if you were, to meet with a podiatrist was going to be about $300, and they would submit it as a out-of-network submission to my health care plan, which would not be covered because it was under, $6,000 for my deductible. Or they said, or you can pay cash and, just do it out of network, pay cash and take care of it that way. And I said, well, how much is it going to cost me if I do cash? And they said, well, we can't really tell you until after, the doctor sees you. And I'm like, my foot hurts. Let me see the doctor. So I went in, she took a look at it, she did properly diagnose it, gave me an anti-inflammatory, it was better the next day, which is what I was looking for, and it cost me $140. So in network, it was $300 submitted to Blue Cross, who then would have said, you're out of network, so we're not going to cover it, so you pay $300, or I could pay cash and pay half that, and that's just wrong. I mean,
if you do, I noticed my wife handles most of our health issue since we have insurance from through her at her employer at the hospital. But you get that statement that says, you know, statement of services, and you see your bill was $3,500. The insurance adjustment was $3,200. You owe $300.
Yeah, yeah. What's with that?
Yeah, you know, or you know, there's some goofy numbers there that, you know, somehow magically it got written off somewhere. But like you said, it was $300, but you pay cash, it's $140. Where'd the other $160 go? Who gets that other $160? So anyway.
Good question.
So, well, that covers, that's probably our longest in the market segment, but that's okay. It was a good topic. I feel a little better that I got to vent with you, Larry. It's time to go into some lighthearted stuff.
Happy
now.
To help, John. Happy to help.
April Fools.
Hey, I love April Fools.
I do. I love playing gags, pulling pranks. You know, you have to be careful. You have to make sure the person that you're pulling the prank on is good at taking such a prank.
And we are not recommending any of these pranks for anyone to use and actually implement. This is on you. If you take a lead and submit it, don't call us and say you told me to, because we're not telling you to. We're sharing stories about someone who may have pulled a particular prank on someone who is totally unrelated to us. So,
yes, my two younger ones pulled a prank on me the other day. Liam is 8. Adeline is 6. I was in the shower, and they decided to get a measuring cup, which was held, I believe it holds 4 cups. Yeah, holds 4 cups of,
it's a big measuring cup.
Water with ice cubes. And they did a really good job of sneaking in because I never heard them. And then they threw, or actually Liam did. Adeline was standing in the back. She was the smart one, just giggling. They threw the ice water on me, which then caused me to scream, and they laughed hysterically. So, yes, our family does play pranks.
That was a chilling experience, John.
Ba-dum-bum. I thought it was cold. Very cold to do that.
Very cold.
So, April Fools, according to the History Channel, April Fools started sometime in the 1700s. English pranksters began popularizing the annual tradition by playing practical jokes on each other. They say that it had been celebrated for several centuries. I'm speculating April Fools dates back all the way to 1582 when France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar as called for by the Council of Trent in 1563. People were slow to get the news, and they thought it was funny because people were on the wrong calendars. Historians also have linked April Fools to ancient festivals such as Hilaria, which is, I guess, where hilarious comes from, celebrated in Rome at the end of March and involved people dressing up in disguises.
Sounds like Halloween.
Times of vernal equinox, first day of spring, Mother Nature fooled people with changing unpredictable weather. So anyway, we're not really sure, but it's been going on for a long time. Newspapers, radios, TV stations have participated and played all kinds of jokes. Some of the ones that I found from history, in 1933, the Madison Capital Times April Fool's edition included a doctored photo of the Wisconsin State Capitol in ruins. They claimed that the building was felled by a series of unusual explosions caused by hot gas produced by the verbose debates in the chambers. Readers weren't amused by the trick, but Washington, D.C. had to be believed it was merely a hoax.
Sounds like current times.
1957, the spaghetti tree. Switzerland, known for banks, chocolate, and so forth. They told millions who fell victim to the BBC April Fool's report touting the bumper harvest from Swiss spaghetti trees.
Spaghetti trees. There you go.
Planetary alignment. This one was good. 1976. This one's funny. On April 1, again, the BBC, Radio 2 astronomer Sir Patrick Moore gave listeners some bunk about how at 9:47 a.m. Pluto and Jupiter would align in such a way as to temporarily reduce Earth's gravity. Moore told listeners to jump exactly that time to experience the once-in-a-lifetime effect. At 9:48, callers flooded the lines, eager to describe how they had briefly floated. I don't know who was playing the trick. I don't remember this one, but this is a good one, too. Sid Finch, 1985. Sports Illustrated. George Plimpton, name sounds familiar, came up with the story. Mel Stottlemyre, the coach of the Mets at the time, was in on it, but said that they had recruited a pitcher that could throw the fastball at 165 miles per hour.
Wow.
So that was a pretty good one there, too. Let's see, do I have any? Oh, here's one. 1998. I missed all these, and we consider ourselves... Did you hear of the left-handed Whopper?
The left-handed Whopper. I did not, John.
Burger King cooked up a Whopper of a different story in 1998. They said that full-page ad, U.S. Today, Burger King announced a solution for 1.4 million left-handed customers visiting their restaurants every day. The left-handed Whopper, Burger King said all the condiments were rotated 180 degrees to suit the left-handed burger connoisseur. Southpaws eagerly tried to order the burger the next day, but they had to wait in line behind right-handed folks equally caught up with making sure they got the correct Whopper. That's a good one. There are some good historical ones.
Only in America, John. Only in America.
So I've been talking too much, but I have some here that will for parents that want to pull a prank on their kids.
Well, I've got a few here that are harmless. Are relatively harmless. I mean, everyone has at one point. I say everyone, but most of us have at one point, you know, had the plastic or rubber spider or tarantula or bug or whatever, and placed them opportunistically where someone would not.
We did that to my wife.
Would not expect them to be, and gotten a chilling response out of that. And they, if you go out to the web and Google the 25 hilarious pranks for April Fool's Day, the first one is cutting out. So this is cheap, you know, just cutting out the shape of a large roach, you know, about 2 inches long, out of black paper or white paper, and coloring it black with a marker, and putting it on the inside of the lampshade. So when your sibling, parent, whoever came home, turned on the light and saw this massive roach inside, you would probably get some type of response.
We did that to my wife. Liam has a bag of pretty
realistic-looking
bugs. Yeah. And we decided it'd be funny to tape one of those to the – we have a part – how do I explain? What's that called? I guess a soffit. And in our that separates the dining room kitchen, and we taped the bug there.
To
so
the
my
soffit.
Wife came home.
Got it.
Came home from work, turned the light on. It was right there, and she proceeded to scream. We proceeded to laugh.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, she found the humor in it.
Yeah, and you were cooking dinner that night, I bet.
Oh no, we were all in bed. It was nighttime. Well, she came home from work.
This is another one I related to John that back in my younger days, we had. Several things. We had filled an office or two completely with balloons, and we had filled a room or two for a fraternity buddy of mine who had gotten married and left on their honeymoon, and unfortunately we were able to talk our way into their apartment before they got back and filled the bedroom with balloons. But I had not thought of this one. This is pretty creative. It shows, you know, they filled up maybe 30, 40 balloons rather than 300 or 400 as we did. And they used tape, and they put them, taped them together and put them on the inside of a glass door. So from the outside, it looks like the entire room is full to the top of the door with balloons, when in actuality, it's just taped to the back of the door. So that's pretty harmless, pretty good. And if you have a lot of patience and some old computers, I would not have thought of this. Someone had taken an old computer keyboard. So it's from a computer they discarded and then we're not using. I don't know if the keyboard was good or bad. But they filled all of the keys with soil and planted seeds and allowed it a week or so to grow. So again, the patience. And they came up and replaced the keyboard. I'm showing John a picture. They replaced this person's keyboard.
It's a Chia keyboard.
And there are Chia, yeah, there's grass growing out of the keyboard. And that, yeah, that's pretty funny. That would take a lot of patience, I think. And if you have a lot of friends and a little time, I'm not sure I would be brave enough to do this, but I guess they followed someone to a convenience store or probably a grocery store. And yeah, that's next.
I'm looking.
He's getting ahead of me here. I got to quit showing him pictures. And they followed this person to a grocery store and evidently had a lot of people because they completely surrounded their car. John was taking a drink. That's not good timing. They completely surrounded his car with shopping carts. I bet there's 100 shopping carts linked together, making a big circle around this individual's car.
I like the
car.
Other one. That's the one I was laughing at, folks.
The piece de resistance. I would not have thought of this, but this is great. Because, you know, not everybody has one, but if you have access to an air horn, and, you know, most everyone's chair, when you sit down, it gives a little. So they've taped an air horn to the underside of the seat so that when the person sat down, the air horn went off.
I will be looking at my chair more closely now in the office.
Yeah, just wait till tomorrow, John. Oh, that one's just like, okay.
That's a good one, man. I could
do that. These are pretty harmless. And
the air horn one, you'll make sure the person has a good heart.
Yeah, yeah. The air horn one, they better have a good heart because otherwise they're going to have to use that deductible under health care. See how it works. Okay, I had to throw those out there. Those are pretty good.
I have some here to confuse your or to get your kids. One mother put a sticker on the back of the truck that says, "Hi, wave and yell her child's name. He doesn't know this is here, April Fool's Day." So as she was driving her son to school, people were driving by honking, saying, "Hi," mm-hmm. in this case, Bob. Mm-hmm. "Hi, Bob." And the kid was completely confused. Freeze your kid's morning cereal. Stuff toilet paper in the toe of your kid's shoes, but before they put the shoes on, comment that you think that their feet are getting bigger. So one of your kid's socks closed halfway down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I have a couple more.
This one's, I don't think I would do this, actually, John, but it is kind of funny. It is kind of mean. You know, do you like candy apples or caramel apples?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're very tasty. And of course, you know, it's not fall yet, apple time, but somebody might appreciate either a candied or a caramel apple. And in this story, they evidently knew they would, but they substituted a raw onion.
That was in here too.
For the apple and coated it and gave it away, and somebody would bite into thinking they had an apple and it was an onion, and that just is mean. That's just mean.
Switch the bags inside two boxes of cereal.
So, yeah.
And this is the one, folks, since this won't air until Saturday morning, it will have already taken place. But I will be putting a few dye pellets under the various faucet caps
strainers,
throughout my house
yeah.
in the uh-huh. sinks mm-hmm. and the shower head. And when they turn on the water, it will be a funny color.
Mm-hmm. And this is one you could, I suppose, do at work. I don't know if I'd recommend it or not, but the story is to, you know, if most restrooms may have some type of air freshener, so to speak, mm-hmm. Within there. And in this case, they it's called Jack's Juice Bait Spray, and it's shrimp scented.
Oh.
And they wrapped it with the cover from a air freshener and put it in the bathroom. So when they sprayed it, let's just say that it may have been better off before they sprayed the shrimp spray.
And one that I'll probably do to my oldest son, Declan, since he enjoys his iPad, change the settings on your kid's mouse or trackpad. So I'm going to change it to the fastest possible. So then he goes to use it, and his cursor is flying across the screen.
And John, I got to get this. This is a very, very, very long-term practical joke, but it's if you're moving into a new house or you're renovating a house... And then the picture.
I keep getting the other ones.
The picture, yeah, Jack keeps seeing the other ones. The picture shows, you know, on the hardwood under the carpet in red paint, it says, "Get out, save yourself," with blood, or, you know, red paint going towards the drain for someone to sign who was changing out the carpet. So that was kind of funny.
And, I remember when we moved into our house and I pulled everything out and there was the subfloor. I think I would have freaked out if I would have seen that on the floor.
Yeah, we're moving, honey. So I don't know. We got to stop there, John. We've had enough.
We run out of time. Well, there's enough gags that we don't have to get into the crazy news stories this week. But we wanted to thank the Chef Shop. I am again enjoying the creme brulee.
Ooh, favorite.
We did have to go back and get some more. We're almost out of that at the office, so.
Yep, definitely a favorite. Every morning, every day, we make at least one, two, or three pots, just depending on if it's myself or John or both of us. We go through it. But thanks to Nancy. Thanks to them for providing us with the underwriting support and WSIE and helping them to stay on the air. That's our goal. Keep WSIE 88.7 FM, the sound, on the air permanently.
I don't know why they keep asking us back.
Yeah, well, you know, it's because of our jokes, John. It's our fine personality and humor. So thanks to them and helping us to bring you a little cheer, hopefully, on this Saturday morning. April Fools, everybody. It was a real show. So have a great day.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.